Okay, we started the tape. Here's a good question. Who is greater, God the Father or Jesus Christ? Well, it depends on what you mean by greater. Who is greater, man or woman? They're equal, right? And yet, God, in His wisdom, in marriage, gave the man authority over a woman, at least a limited amount of authority. So I think it's the same, or at least similar, because like we read, remember, of the same substance as the Father, equal, all right? But clearly, in this Trinity, if you will, the Son submits to the Father. So Jesus says the Father is greater than me. Doesn't mean He's better than me. It doesn't mean He's more powerful than me. He says He's over me. I'm in submission. And Jesus said, I always say what He wants me to say, and I do what He wants me to do. All right? So it's a little bit hard for us to kind of get it. It's a little bit abstract to us. But Jesus is equal to God, and yet He's in submission to God. Okay? Next question. What happens after Matthew 25, 51 through 52? The problem is that Matthew 25 ends in verse 46. So I have no idea what that question is about. He's asking about what happens after Matthew 25, 51 through 52. There is no verse. So that person should probably resubmit their question, okay? All right. This is a funny question. I've never gotten this one. Why are Moses and Elijah at the Transfiguration, but not Abraham or David? Ask God. All right. Next. Tell us about ISIS and their belief in doctrine. Ask ISIS, seriously. But I would say this. ISIS are not legitimate Muslims. They're not. And so when other Muslims say that they're not legitimate Muslims, it's because they're not. Now, does the Quran anticipate violence in the name of Islam? Yes, it does. Does Jesus anticipate violence in the name of Him? Definitely not. Does the idea of jihad in Islam mean violence in certain cases? Yes. Would the kinds of things that ISIS is doing be countenanced or supported by Muhammad or by the Quran? Definitely not. The taking of lives, almost the vast majority of the lives they take are fellow Muslims. It's about hatred, it's about greed, and it's about power. But as to their doctrine, what are you talking about doctrine? Their doctrine is hatred. All right. Now, this is a difficult question about suicide. Essentially, it's talking about a suicide committed by a mentally or psychologically ill person. All right. And it is true that those who take their own life are pretty much, without exception, suffering from some kind of mental illness, typically depression. Now, is suicide a sin? Well, yeah, how could it not be a sin to essentially no longer trust in God and put your fate in His hands? And the worst thing about suicide is it's so horrible what it does to those left behind. It's got to be, in some sense, the most selfish thing that anybody could ever do. Seriously. In order to save your own suffering, you'd cause 10 times more suffering on somebody else. But, so what do we do about that? Does that mean if somebody commits suicide, they're going to hell? The Catholic Church teaches that. But that would mean, essentially, if you committed a sin and didn't have time to repent of it, then you go to hell because you didn't have time to repent. As if that's a biblical teaching. There are sins that I commit that I've never repented of. Some of them I wasn't even aware I committed. There's other sins, honestly, that I should feel bad about that I've gotten haven't gotten around to feeling bad about yet. All right? And so who are we to judge somebody in that situation? In San Diego, we had two suicides within the last year in the church. That's pretty intense. One was a teenager who had not yet been baptized. Well, that's worse. The thing is, he was studying. That's tough. And the other one was a member of the church. He had extreme pain. I mean, first of all, he suffered from severe depression. And he had unending pain and a disease that was only going to get worse and worse and worse. Does that justify him taking his life? No. But, you know, I'm not going to throw the first stone at that person. So I think our response to suicide should be compassion toward those left behind. And we should educate one another about this danger. But I don't think that people go to hell because they committed suicide. That just doesn't make any sense based on what I know from Christianity. All right, I've got one more question. I'm going to move on, though, because I need to get to this. All right, next, number four. What about killing in the Old Testament? This is a hard one. This is a really hard one. This is just really hard. So I'm going to read 1 Samuel 15, 2 through 3. This is what the Lord of hosts says. I witnessed what the Amalekites did to the Israelites when they opposed them along the way as they're coming out of Egypt. Now go and attack the Amalekites. Completely destroy everything they have. Do not spare them. Kill men and women, children and infants, oxen and sheep, camels and donkeys. That's pretty tough stuff. All right, so because, you know, we believe in a God who's a God of love. All right, and who's patient and kind and wants to forgive. All right, and so the skeptics really got us in a tough spot here, honestly. You know, this God who's telling his people to commit genocide, which in essence is true. Now, I'm going to give a response to this. Roland wrote an article. I'll let him forward that to you. I think it's a good article. All right. But again, the answer to this, there's no easy answer, all right, to say the least. Number one, if this doesn't bother you, then I'm worried about you. You know? If this doesn't make you struggle at least a little bit, it should. Do you think the Jews struggled with putting this order into effect? Do you think that they might have had post-traumatic stress as a result of this? Yeah. Wow. So let me give you my arguments in response to that. I'll tell you right now, though, at the end of this argument, it doesn't remove the emotional aspect of this. All right? And by the way, you know, if you have somebody who's suffering, somebody whose parent died, don't pull this study on the problem of suffering out right then, all right? Don't go to Matthew 8:28 and say, everything works out for the good of those who love him. So you just need to realize this is for your good. Excuse me? They need compassion. Anyway, number two, those who would put this out there don't realize that physical death, the fact that these people died in this situation, that alone is not evil. Death is not the issue. Now, murder, that's a problem. Anger, but death, although it's tragic to us, from God's perspective, all these people were going to die eventually. Now, this is not enough, all right? If this is your only argument, this is not enough. But I'm just mentioning that. The fact that they died in and of itself is not evil. And conceivably, the fact that they were killed even is not necessarily evil. We can talk about that. Number two, God has a right to judge. That's the bottom line. God has a right. Now, some of us feel like we have a right to tell God what he ought to do. Have you ever heard people say this? If that's the way God is, then I'm not going to worship him. All right, if you want to go with that plan, you know, good luck with that one. You know, in other words, God needs to be the exact way I want him to be. And if he's not, I'm not going to love him. Okay. All right. God has a right to judge. And if God says their time is up, then their time is up. You know, there are certain traits that God has that we're happy with. There's other traits that God has we're not so happy about sometimes. Everybody likes God's love. Not everybody likes his holiness. And God is holy. God is as holy as he is love. His justice is overwhelming, just like his love is overwhelming. And his holiness. Every trait God has, he has it to an infinite degree. So God has a right to judge. End of story. Point number four. Then there's the issue of the Amalekites' religion. It was absolutely disgusting. Their worship of Chemosh involved taking their babies and throwing them into a fire in order to worship this disgusting idea of a god that they had. They worship Baal. They worship Ashtaroth. One way they worship God was to go to a temple and have sex with a prostitute. That's worship. This was abominable and absolutely disgusting. And God hated it. But remember, earlier on it said to Moses, don't take him out now. We're going to let their sin reach its full measure. Then we're going to take him out. All right? That's worth noting. What about the children? I believe the children will be with God. Now, this isn't the whole answer, but what chance did a baby being born in this culture have of growing up, worshiping God, loving God, and being with him for eternity? Not much. Now, I hesitate to say anything like this, God did them a favor. I mean, I just said those words, but I'm taking them back right away. Because I don't mean that. But you could defend that. I mean, as far as the children and the infants, I believe they will be with God forever. And I believe their death was very quick and at least merciful in that sense. Okay? In the case of Amalek and the Canaanites, God's love and his justice demanded something. Next point. This alone is not sufficient, but this is worth mentioning. God had a plan. And that plan to save mankind was to choose a man of faith, to him to create a people, to give them a place, a nation, to give them kings, although there's some question about whether that was his will, but apparently it was, to give them prophets. The bottom line is, This first kingdom was a physical kingdom with territory. And there were people living there. And necessary for this to happen was for those people to not be living there anymore. And that was God's plan. And I'm not going to debate God's plan. I say it's a good plan. The bottom line is, in the year 1200 BC, to be a nation, you had to have an army. You know? I suppose kind of, you know, God could have been like President Trump, you know, put up a wall. That was a joke right there. Not a very funny joke, but it was a joke. All right. So the bottom line is, that was God's plan. Okay? Now, next. This idea of war, a just war, that's a difficult doctrine. But I believe what they did was just. But God did not give them permission to just willy-nilly go killing people. Far from it. God gave them a very, very limited commission here. They were not allowed to torture. They were not allowed to go on offensive campaigns. They were not allowed to raid other peoples. They were not allowed to take slaves indefinitely. All right? Almost everything that's horrible about war, God made it so they could not do that. Of course, there's one horrible thing about war, which is death. I'll have to say that. So no abuse, no cruelty, no rape was allowed. All right, I believe this gives a completely rational answer. It makes sense. But it still bothers me, okay? But I'm going to go on to the next question. I could talk about the question of slavery. Let me see, do I have time? I often skip this, but I'm gonna spend a little bit of time here. What about slavery? God made provision in the Old Testament for slavery, did He not? And this also can be troubling for us. All right? Now, God never approved of it. He accommodated it. It's kind of like how He accommodated divorce. It's kind of like how He even accommodated polygamy. God hates divorce. God hates polygamy. And God hates slavery. But because of our sin, especially under the Old Covenant, He allowed a very limited, version of some of these things. Now, everything God said about slavery was not do it or it's a good idea. Every single thing He said about it was to limit it. For example, they could not buy and sell slaves. Period. All right? Their treatment was humane. Very humane. If you look at Deuteronomy 23:15 and 25:14, basically they were to be treated as members of your household. Okay? And all slaves were eventually freed, and the children were not slaves. Okay? So this slavery was very, very limited. It was somewhat similar to what would some call indentured servants. In fact, people often chose to go into slavery in certain situations, and we know that from reading the Bible, because other life situations could have been worse for them. God's concern is not with physical slavery, His concern is with spiritual slavery. Nevertheless, Paul asked Philemon, free that slave. And the Christian ethic clearly is completely unaccepting of slavery, obviously. All right. In fact, if it were not for Christianity, slavery would be everywhere in the world. And the only reason slavery does not exist today is because of Christian influence. Okay? Last, the question about hell. Now, here's a tough question. How can a loving God send those he loves to hell? That's tough. You say, well, it's just like parents discipline their children. No, it's not like that. Hell has nothing to do with discipline.